Three, two, one.
Welcome everyone to this week's episode of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host Ezra Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity Inclusion at Revive, and I'm joined by co-host Stephanie Weirwill, SVP of Integrated Marketing. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello, Des. I'm ready for some hot topics today. You like that 90s throwback?
Always love a 90s throwback. And we're also joined by co-host Chris Wickline, SVP of Strategy at Revive. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Des. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, hi, hi. All right. So I will not beat around the bush. As we, Stephanie noted, we have a lot of interesting things to talk about today, but we'll start with some headlines and what's going on. There's some rumors, there's some hot takes and a couple of things, but Stephanie, what have you been seeing?
Yes, there's a lot going on. There's a lot happening in the healthcare space this week, this month. Speaking of rumors, the very exciting rumor is that Apple may be one step closer to developing a no prick blood glucose monitor for our favorite Apple Watch. So, you know, currently glucose monitors require a prick, whether it is the level system, the Signos system, the diabetes glucose monitors. But the rumor has been for a long time that Apple's working on developing something with the Apple Watch, and it sounds like they've made some breakthroughs with their lovely algorithm and lights. So this would be a huge, huge, huge deal in the diabetes space, in the wearable space, and we'll see.
I have a question. Does that make it a bona fide medical device now?
Ooh. I don't have the answer to that. Sounds like it.
Yeah, I wonder what that does. I wonder if that changes some aspect of, you know, it's no longer just a consumer device with some health things. It's now more of a legit medical device that has other requirements. Just wondering.
The future and having more of that connectivity where your results are sent directly to a provider so that they can, what is it, the virtual monitoring, keeping you healthy. But yeah.
Yes. And so speaking of the diabetes space, if you've opened your news feed recently, opened any news app, turned on the local news, Ozempic is all over the place. Chris, maybe you can sing to us the Ozempic jingle later, but that song is stuck in all of our heads. So I'll just give a brief overview of what's happening in case anyone's, you know, kind of not watching that space like a hawk like we are. But essentially, the Ozempic drug, which is made by Novo Nordisk, and there are some competitors, Wegovy and others. It's a semaglutide, which means it's been around for a long time, actually, for diabetes patients. It helps regulate insulin, and it also happens to help with weight loss. So what it does is allows your stomach to empty a little bit slower, tells your brain you're not hungry, decreases appetite, and the weight just melts right off. Yes, there are side effects like other medication, but because of this weight loss benefit, it has gone viral. Maybe the biggest viral drug since, oh, I don't know, the COVID vaccine or, you know, dare I say, Fen-Phen in the 80s. But there are a lot of sides to this story. I'm going to pause right here because it is creating a lot of stir out there in the media.
I mean, we love a quick fix, don't we? But at the expense of what? It's fascinating the depths of which diet culture infiltrates our lives, controls all the things. I feel like it's going to be a DEI table talk we need to discuss for March. But yeah, it's part of me is like, okay, yeah, I'm into taking this pill or this injection to, you know, give me all the results that I want. Obviously, there's factors that play into the fact that these drugs are not as available for those that actually need them, that are battling diabetes. But curious, Chris, what are your thoughts?
Oh man, this is just so complex, isn't it? I mean, in one case, there's all kinds of drugs that have had secondary benefits, right? That one that starts with a V. Oh, what is it? Oh, let me think, because they don't advertise it enough. Viagra was born out of a secondary, you know, a secondary impact, actually, right? They sound, it was a drug that was originally purposed for something else. But today, you know, there's all kinds of kind of off label uses for different types of drugs. So that's not uncommon. But what is uncommon is, you know, the impact that this one is really having. And I think it's just calling the question around where our culture is, which I think is also a very interesting dynamic, right? And two things can be true. You know, I think two things can be true. We can be going through body positivity at the same time. We still have, you know, this idea of, you know, thin is what makes us beautiful, but it's hard for me to wrap my brain around that sometimes. It just is.
It really is. And this is a complex issue, and we could spend 2 hours talking about it because there are many sides to the story, right? On one hand, it's amazing that this drug and its various forms have helped diabetes patients. It's amazing that it can help those with PCOS. It's amazing that it can help, you know, those with obesity who need medically need assistance. At the same time, this has been picked up by celebrities. There are Ozempic parties that have been had by certain celebrities that will remain nameless. There are some that, you know, have actively said, Elon Musk, that he has used Wegovy. And there are many others that have talked about their use of it. And that has led to influencers using it, which has led to our news feeds being filled with thin is in. And so it leads to maybe perhaps mental health struggles. On the other hand, I don't, you know, anybody who wants to feel good in various ways, good for you, right? The challenge is that this has led to the massive drug shortage. You can't get it. Those who need it can't get it, as Des said. But I do want to share, just from a business standpoint, one fun little stat, which is Novo Nordisk, the company that introduced Ozempic in 2017, their operating profits are up 58% since then. And the sales of this category of drugs grew by 42% last year, accounting for 98% of the company's overall growth. So,
wow. Big, big money.
Yeah, and big incentives, right?
Yeah. It's when you mention the Ozempic parties, it reminds me of like, oh, wow, is this the new Botox party? Just going to hire up your friend that can administer and, you know, have a good time and just watch all the weight fall off of you and your friends.
Oh, but it's a whole idea of carry the thought through, right? I mean, all the downstream side effects and the other things that we're not talking about, right? So you see that, I think, Des, you said it at the top of the discussion around the idea of, you know, us being an instant culture. Well, some of the downstream side effects are pretty kind of scary for somebody who's typically healthy, right? I don't recall what they are. You guys might, but you know, I mean, there's potentially big negative side effects for otherwise healthy people.
There are, for example, anytime you lose weight quickly, you could have gallbladder challenges. So that's one. But there are many other potential side effects. And some studies have shown in rats that this medication could lead to thyroid cancer. So there is conversation in social media like, oh, thyroid cancer is not that bad. It's not lung cancer. I'm fine, right? And I want to be clear, medication does come with side effects and there are always risks. But the question is, are people having these conversations with their doctors or are they getting this medication through side doors? That's, I think, the bigger question.
It really is. And it also segues and takes us into our big discussion for today and around those decisions that consumers are needing to make, especially in our immediate response culture, our just wanting to get the fix now. So we know that consumers are increasingly frustrated with the lack of available appointments, hearing from doctors that they're not taking new patients. So when you're looking to get on the right track and do the right thing to get those questions answered beyond Dr. Google, you know, there's not that provider that's available. Because all the conversation is around like, okay, you need a primary care physician. all right, well, what are the steps to get that? It's like, oh, well, we're not taking in any new patients. So it's like, where do I go? And especially given all of that connection to the devices, the wearables, the Apple Watch of it all, the connectivity, the sexy branding, you know, we're leaning more towards that concierge or even just that provider disruptor that's in coming into your market because you feel like, wow, this is something that I can get a hold of, especially for those that are in millennial and Gen Z generations that this is super appealing to. So as a consumer that is looking to get their life together, not just take a quick pill, want to get that PCP and get their plan in order, what are some of the factors that they need to take into consideration, knowing that there are so many options of people breaking in or organizations breaking into this medium? We've seen that CVS Health recently is looking to acquire Oak Street Health for billions and billions of dollars, and that we're looking at this Forbes list of most admired companies. We were looking at some of the top folks in healthcare, which is Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, just a few names that you've been hearing more and more about in these recent years. And then CVS is actually one of those top healthcare brands. And you think of them as a consumer brand. They've been instrumental in COVID vaccine dissemination and testing and all of that good stuff. And now they were getting their feet wet in their primary care business. What are our thoughts on that? How do we feel about that?
Oh, I mean, you know, there's so many places we can go with this conversation. So this is going to be fun. Buckle up, right? There's unmet need. I mean, you mentioned it, Des, right? It's tough to find somebody. And if you do, it's tough to get in. So I think, you know, I think a lot of these companies, there's a lot of different motivations, but I would posit that all of them are really kind of focused on there's unmet opportunity and there's an opportunity to make money. Now, I don't want to say that people aren't trying to be helpful. That's not what I'm trying to say. Payers see the opportunity to better manage care and efficiency, and in their words, produce better outcomes. You know, other folks like the quick care providers are seeing an opportunity to provide more convenience. So all of them are coming at it in a different way as a way to make money based on unmet need. That's my hot take from a business point of view.
Yeah, I will add one more point on the unmet need standpoint, which is one of the reasons why the space is ripe for disruption is because of the experience and the patient experience and the struggle there. And, you know, PCP has long been marketed as, I'm your health partner. This is your health partner. I'm with you for your entire life. I'm here when you need me, you know, to help you with anything you're going through and refer you to specialists when you need and so on and so forth, right? That's the story. And for the most part, yeah, okay. But there's a lot of challenges with that, right? Like there's PCPs don't have enough time. There's not enough access. They can't see enough patients. They can't spend long enough with them. They can't have those in-depth conversations. They're struggling to keep up with their MyChart messages. And so what that leads to is on the consumer side, I don't have a health partner. If I can even find a PCP, which how do you even begin? I don't have a health partner. And so now enter all these new players offering convenience and true partnership and in-depth time.
And those that have been lucky enough to have had a PCP all throughout their life, they know their entire medical and health history. That's incredible. However, a number of us, why do you end up looking for a new doctor? It's because you have moved, your doctor has left or retired or what have you. And so there isn't always that opportunity. And as we've learned and have been able to move about the cabin in more recent years for those that are able to work more remotely, virtually, you know, how do you keep up with care when you are on the road, when you are moving, you know, and going about finding that new care provider in your new location? So it's no longer the case that majority of us are growing up, living and staying and retiring in the communities that we were originally born in. So that idea of even having access to someone that has more of a national presence, like some of these disruptors, is very appealing, at least for me, that I can get my care while I'm on the road because I like to travel. I like to be on these streets.
But, you know, and I think that's a great point. But for me, it's not just about finding a place for care. I can always find a place for care, you know, if I stub my toe while I'm, you know, at Disney World running around the park, I can go to a place for care. The issue is it connected? And as you get older, and I think that's also part of the issue, you know, we talk a lot with our clients about, you know, what different consumer segments are looking for in primary care, right? I mean, I'm a 56-year-old female who, you know, I've gone through the life cycle, right? I've had my children and I've cared for my family and I've had different health needs. The older we get, that's the reality. The older we get, the more health needs we have. And I am one of those. And you know, I've shared that story that I've had that primary care provider for lots of years and I've moved and I'm looking for that. But for me, it's not just about finding a place that feels like the same, you better be able to deliver that continuity of care. And honestly, that's for me and, you know, what I'm looking for. It's about that trust. It's about that guidance. It's about knowing all of those parts of me. And I have had a primary care doc who delivered on that. I really feel sad for others that haven't. And I think that's the hope of, you know, some of the One Medicals and, you know, the concierge care that's really built around that.
Yeah. So let's talk for a second about I'll use the word segmentation, consumer segmentation in terms of the different types of consumers and the different needs and how these various primary care players are targeting those and meeting those. So, you know, there's, you know, the segment like you, Chris, who's maybe had a primary care for a very long time and has had that partner and, you know, maybe on the lookout for a new one or looking to continue that existing partner. I think I represent an audience that, really into, as I've shared on this podcast, health data. I want the cutting edge science. I want to have long conversations with the PCP about all the things I can do to prevent anything. And I can't have that with a traditional PCP because there's just not enough time in the appointment. And frankly, they're not bringing that kind of data to the table. So I think my type of audience members get really excited about some of the new entrants, like I've mentioned Parsley Health before on this podcast, Wild Health, Forward, Hims and Hers, some of those that are touting advanced diagnostics and touting health coaching. As you don't just get a PCP, you also get many, many discussions with a health coach and you get ongoing lab work and, you know, you can ask them about, is a cold plunge scientifically viable? Should I be doing that? But they cost. They're so expensive. So it can be anywhere from 100 to 200 plus a month out of pocket, and that does not count the diagnostics and the lab work. So who are they targeting? They're targeting the affluent millennials. Right? And I mean affluent. I cannot afford this, to be clear. Some of those, like Parsley, are creating relationships with health plans and employers. Parsley just got in network with Aetna, so we may see that change. So let me just pause there. Dez, which segment would you say you're a part of, and what do you need in a primary care physician?
The segment I'm probably a part of is a little more of that non-traditional, that I guess Eastern medicine. I want to understand, you know, food through medicine. So for me, I have also a little bit of avoidant personality when it comes to healthcare. So I fall very much in that category of like, yes, I know what I should be doing, but there isn't a urgent need right now. And then I feel like I can take care of any issues currently through, you know, food related and adjusting my diet, getting more probiotics in my system. But I also love the idea of something that is a little more holistic, that's getting at the root cause of all of my, inflammation that's occurring. Is it more to do with stress? Has it more to do with what I'm intaking than, you know, what pills I'm on or what the scale says, which that's a whole nother conversation. But yeah, I'm probably more in that category. So what I'm looking for is probably someone that is going to be a little more into open to, I guess, prescribing that. I don't know, I guess, I can't think of acupuncture or holistic chiropractic to align my spine system. So I guess I fall more into that category.
Yes. And there are actually, I've dug deep into acupuncture last week. This is a side note, but there are health systems who have stood up some of those, you know, complementary medicine practices for that very reason. And so the area of functional medicine, integrative medicine, complementary medicine is really coming about, but it's just not, it's not in every market yet. You know, your regional local health systems aren't there yet. So maybe we'll see that in the next 10 years.
Well, and I think a lot of it goes back to what's their strategy and how are they making money. I'm just, you know, the reality is, you know, health systems have been advancing their march into value-based care. And I, you know, I think the hope is for all of us in the industry that more meaningful advancement into value-based care is actually going to cause us to really put our money where our mouth is and making primary care the center of it and engaging people in their health, right? And I think that's the hope and that's the promise. Honestly, I think that's, you know, I mean, a lot of payers have been pushing that, right? I mean, the fee-for-service model is not serving us well in many cases. And I think, you know, keeping us healthy is, you know, it's a key to making us healthy, right? Is making those advances.
So, Chris, I have a question for you. Speaking of these various models are a function of the business model and the business strategy and how they need to make money. So let's pull apart One Medical for a second, because this past week, One Medical went nationwide. It was on the homepage of Amazon, and they're offering a price point for primary care through One Medical that's now fully integrated with Amazon. So pull that apart for us a little bit.
Well, I mean, here's what I think. Because again, I mean, in the course of doing other research, guess what? Sponsored ad, right? One Medical. And the words were, you know, it was a picture of a young woman. She was smiling and she was happy. It touted the idea of virtual care, making it easier. And there's a cool, simple description of how One Medical makes it easier. My hypothesis is if you pull it apart, there's a subscription-based model for convenient care for a certain type of consumer segment, right? As they continue to expand, they have the opportunity to enhance that with face-to-face. And of course, One Medical is also dealing direct with employer groups, right? As a way to help employers control costs and a subscription-based model for employers. And of course, you could see how it's it easily moves into models of segmented populations where they can take risk. So I think there's a lot of different places they can go, but it seems like they're starting right away with more convenient care and tying together more remote care, because again, they need to expand their footprint for face-to-face care.
Yeah. And it's fascinating because, of course, in the health system world, primary care is not where health systems make the money. That's not where they make their margins. Primary care is an entry point into service lines and an entry point into specialty care and a very important top of funnel, top of the acuity funnel entry point, which Joe Public, side note, little note, Chris Bevelo's, our CEO's recent book goes into depth about the funnel wars and why that's important. So go read that for anyone who hasn't. But I bring that up because that's a completely different model than these subscription services, especially the ones with the high price point out of pocket. One reason I personally have not yet signed up, aside from the fact that I can't afford it, is because I can't quite tell how many members they have. And I have a concern because I can't see yet a mass amount of reviews and I can't see yet the success. I read the studies. I see, you know, all the, you know, findings of will help you lower your A1C levels and all those kinds of things. But I want the proof and I want the reviews. And I'm concerned about the long-term viability of the business model because it's a high price point and a low and a small market, to be honest. Higher price point than a Peloton, but I do believe that there's a world for that. And I'm very excited to see where they go. So very different business strategies.
I mean, I'll tell you what I've held back on and why I'm not doing One Medical just yet, even with the reduced price point, but I may pull that trigger. First of all, One Med is coming into my market and I just moved and I'm looking for a primary care doc. So I think I will make that leap if there's any way I can, if nothing else, because I'm a healthcare wonk and I want to try it, right? But why I have a hard time pulling the trigger right now is if it's all remote through my employer, I have access to remote-based care. I have, you know, I have easy prescription through a mail order PBM, right? I have all of those things that they're trying to piece together that I don't currently have. So I'm not going to double spend that money right now. But I think it is an interesting You know, this is also really, guys, something that health systems have struggled to pull together. How do we tie together these various disparate elements of care? We know the struggles we've had in integrating virtual and in-person health. We don't even talk about prescription in our space for the most part, right? And that's another thing Amazon's bringing to the table. So I agree. Time will tell. The pieces are there. And now let's see the value and the value that consumers place.
Yeah, prescriptions is a big key point, because if we look at a Hims and a Hers, Hims and Hers, they started out as a prescription-based kind of online virtual care. Get your prescriptions where you need them for certain types of conditions, and then moved into supplements and retail, and now they offer primary care. So primary care is a doorway for them into, oh, here's the supplements you need, here's the prescriptions, and we can offer you those too. And that's very, very different than a health system who, you know, does, yes, has a pharmacy inside the health system, but they're not selling prescriptions.
Yeah, and it's the same thing, that opportunity that we see with CVS Health as they purchase it, Aetna, and then they're now looking to purchase Oak Street, where there is that connectivity between providing the care, but then also providing the prescriptions to go along with said care, or folks getting access to prescriptions much faster when they're not able to get to a doctor. And so a lot of this fury on getting into, or flurry and getting into this space, is because there's an opportunity for money to be made. But I'm thinking about consumer behaviors. And yes, consumers say that they want convenience, they want all these things, and then it's going to be delivered by these companies, perhaps at a premium cost. But will they actually take hold? And that's, Stephanie, I think what you were getting at is how much of this will actually take off, will consumers choose, versus their behavior of what we know. And what we know is that we go to our doctor, we go to the hospital, the health system, in order to the medical group, in order to get the care that we need. So with that, as far as all of this competition that is brewing, what should hospitals, health systems, medical groups, what should they be thinking about? What should they be doing?
I will take it from the standpoint of, from a marketing perspective, I think there's a lot to learn. Chris, you may have a lot of thoughts on the business side of it. But from a marketing perspective, these new entrants have shown a, I won't call it a new way, but a different way to market primary care than has traditionally been done. Traditionally, primary care has been marketed as, you know, expertise, quality, part of the larger whole, right? If you're an academic medical center, you know, your larger whole may be about innovation or expertise or whatever. And primary care is one service line and one part of the picture. And frankly, drives people to, you know, find a doctor themselves and sort through these pages and pages of doctors. And new entrants have turned that on its head. They're acting like retailers. They're acting like lifestyle brands. They're acting like consumer brands. So their benefit, their message is just, we will help you get as healthy as possible. And that's the consumer benefit. Everyone wants to be healthier, but people don't want to have to go it alone or figure it out or do a lot of effort. So it's marketed as a lifestyle brand, beautiful, beautiful imagery, and honestly, a lot of really fascinating scientific information for some of the ones that I've mentioned, like a Wild Health or a Parsley or a Forward, really interesting scientific information that's presented easily digestible. Whereas I think, you know, health systems often do produce a lot of scientific information, but they're long form articles and kind of difficult to sort through. And this is coming out as, you know, podcasts or Instagram posts or TikTok or whatever. And guess what? You don't have to find a doctor. You don't have to sort through doctor information. And it's actually taking away, I think, the long assumption, which has been people want to research their doctor and choose a doctor. And we know that to be true in the research. But these new entrants are actually treating it like a retailer and saying, no, 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 we're the brand. We're going to, you know, make it easy for you to sign up, and we'll match you with the best doctor for you. Don't worry about that. It's a barrier sometimes for folks to choose their doctor. That's my personal perspective.
Question. Given that there's a shortage of providers, where are these doctors coming from?
Uh-huh. Important question. I've looked a lot into that. And it's really, really hard to figure out and find how many physicians do they employ? Who are the physicians? What is their background? What are their credentials? That's another reason I haven't signed up.
That's interesting. I mean, when you see kind of the number of physicians that have gone to work on the plan side, that's an interesting fact, right? So I wonder if it's that same thing when it comes to some of these disruptors. So in other words, you hear that physicians are moving to plans because, again, you don't have the same kind of stressors that have been causing some of the burnout in health systems, right? Now, I don't have the numbers around that, but that has certainly been some of the discussion in the industry. And as we've heard physicians looking at going to plans, I wonder if it's a similar case when it comes to these disruptors. I want to be able to practice medicine the way I want to be able to practice medicine, you know, which is, you know, caring for a consumer kind of throughout their continuum of needs. So, you know, that's my hope. That's my hope that they're doing business differently. I think, you know, you gave a beautiful answer from a marketing point of view, Stephanie. I'd be saying as a marketer, my question in my health system leadership is, where are we placing our bets when it comes to primary care? What are those business models? And as a marketer, how do I need to flex, right? How do I need to marketer and communicator? How do I need to flex? So let's use the example. If you're doing value-based care, how are you working to support communications that drive to keep members healthy based on the objectives of your value-based care program? You know, that's not traditional marketing in the health system world where, you know, we've been trying to drive new patients or existing patients to different kinds of services that we offer. That's a whole different type of approach for engagement. You know, where are other bets that the health system is placing, you know, when it comes to primary care? We see, you know, some health systems partnering with these. We've talked disruptors, right? We've talked about that, you know, on our program before. So I think the question is, you know, as a marketer, follow also the business strategy and start thinking about different ways and ways you need to flex to meet that.
Yeah. And if I can just add one more thing, I think if I could give advice to a disruptor, it would be disruptors can learn from health systems in a sense too. And so there's vice versa learning. So I mentioned a couple of things that at least I see as a gap for the disruptor side. It is you still have to show your expertise and you still have to find a way to do that. You still have to make people feel connected to a physician and allow them to choose the right physician. You still have to show your proof point of, you know, human-based people stories and testimonials that people can believe that are authentic. I think influencers is a great route for that. So I want to be clear, like disruptors are doing some amazing things. I think health systems are doing some amazing things too. We can learn from both and find the right model overall.
It feels like the model is just that partnership, where if these disruptors are doing the marketing, for say, the getting people in the front door the best, that way, if they are partnering with the health system, they have that expertise behind them, backing them, so that if there is something beyond just kind of the basics of care, of, you know, medicine management, all of that good stuff, then that could then be connected to that expertise at a healthcare facility could provide, and also then take that off their plate of something to have to worry about, have to figure out how to market and funnel in, since it's not a huge generator of profits.
Well, it's not, but it is for downstream. And that's where there's a case to be made for what's your strategy. I mean, there's a system here in the Milwaukee area. Freightert has partnered with Carbon Health. Now, I've not yet seen that come into the market yet. They've announced it in April of 2022. They are a academic medical center. They are focused on specialty care. They're partnering with Carbon on primary, right? With the, you know, partnership of getting that downstream complex care. That said, a lot of health systems, I don't know that they'd want to place their bets on specializing so much that they lose top of funnel, because that means where do you go next when your partnership fizzles? Who are you going to partner with next to make sure that you're getting the referral stream that keeps you viable? Again, that's where it goes back to business strategy. And are you owning the customer and customer experience, or are you really kind of focusing more singularly on, I'll say, a product like specialty care, right? Because if you give up primary care, that creates other dynamics.
Yeah, and one last note, speaking of partnerships, is the payer side of the house is so important too. Like, yes, there are absolutely many payviders that are coming about, but also for a provider, the partnerships with payers are becoming even more important. And these new entrants are starting to now, you know, be in network with payers, which what they're going to find very quickly is the challenges of reimbursement and then start to discover that maybe the margins are not as high as originally thought and so on and so forth. So I just wanted to bring up that there are many levels of partnership when it comes to healthcare.
And I've said this before, but I got to say it again, because when we talk CVS, we think CVS, we think the little place with the heart on the corner. The reality is that's Aetna, right? Now, we, you know, and again, I mean, let's be clear that that is, a, you know, I mean, the organization they are building is a, you know, a fully vertical healthcare organization. They're probably not going to own hospitals because that's not a super profitable business and it's tough, 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 right? But they're going to own a lot else. So anyways, we call it a disruptor and they are, but let's not forget they're a payer.
And on,
yes.
So on that note, I know we can go forever and ever because there's so many different scenarios.
No, we can't stop. Are you kidding me? Come on. We've got at least 30 more minutes. No, I'm just kidding.
So yeah, it sounds like, you know, pay attention to what your business strategy is and then plan accordingly based on that. And but that you can learn from the other party, because just because you're coming in with a fresh idea does not mean that it's been fully vetted. And just because you're coming in with that expertise, there is a fresh way that you can be thinking about it and reaching consumers. So with that, we'll wrap up the show. Stephanie, Chris, thanks so much for such an engaging conversation. And for all of you listening, thank you so much for joining in. If there's something you want us to cover, shoot us an email at nonormal@reviveagency.com. And make sure you share the show with friends and colleagues and give us a review and rating on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. All of that would be greatly appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all. And we'll see you next time.